You're listening to the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
Welcome to Quantum Leap Book Club. During the next hour, beloved mind scientist Carisha and her guests from around the world will read and discuss various best-selling books with well-known authors. Every show will apply retention techniques designed to help you to absorb powerful knowledge to effectively change your life. Join us every week for a thought-provoking hour and listen as often as you can.
Sydney, Australia,
you will be delighted by what you learn, and you will be excited by the results.
Lifelong entrepreneur.
Are you
from
ready
Denver,
to
Colorado?
Take the quantum leap.
Rosemary Heyer.
Here's Parisha.
English teacher working with children in Frankfurt, Germany. Marianne Love, psychologist from Melbourne, Australia. And myself, Dr. Joyce Mollenhauer, doctor of naturopathy, a registered nurse in Kingman. So our book this week is Mind into Matter, A New Alchemy of Science and Spirit. And we will be discussing the end part of chapter one, starting on the bottom of page 22 tonight. Dr. Fred Alan Wolfe is the author of this book and many, many other books and wonderful YouTubes that are out there available. So I just would like to make an initial comment because I happen to be listening to one of his YouTubes today. And I love the fact that he described his whole life journey being driven by intense curiosity. And that curiosity was more than just a superficial. He needed and desired strongly to know why things existed as they do, and what was the effect on him, his life, and life on the planet, and life on the universe. So this book that we're currently studying definitely covers a lot of that and brings in what his own studies have concluded, bringing science and spirit together. He definitely thinks out of the box, which has led him to such a deep understanding of what unity is all about, and our connection to everything in our life and our universe. And they are major topics, of course, of interest today worldwide. And there's a little poem on page 23 that I think expresses what he represents in that way. So it goes, heaven above, heaven below, stars above, stars below, all that is above also is below. Grasp this and rejoice. So a lot of the discussion that we're going to be having today will be helping us grasp that, bring those many, many elements together, and give our own brains a chance to expand. So who would like to have some sort of comment?
What I wanted to say in looking at page 23 and exactly that particular passage that you read, just above it, there is a paragraph that says, but how did the ancient alchemists accomplish their seeming magic? How did they cross over the boundaries and evade the ever-present trickster at the border? Then it says, and they had to expect to see the trickster, who once they recognized him as an image of themselves, would let them pass. Interestingly enough, it brought to mind a story of how a peasant went to the king one day and said, I want to be able to look at you and tell you what I see, and you look at me and tell me what you see, and I want there to be no consequences, right? So the king said, so let it be. So the peasant said, well, I see a pig. And the king said, I see a king. And the peasant said, I see a filthy pig. And the king said, I see a very handsome king. So the peasant said, well, I thought we were going to tell each other the truth, and there were going to be no consequences. And the king said, a pig sees a pig, and a king sees a king. In coupling that with that passage that he talked about in my own life, as I'm doing currently my own overt and withhold, I'm recognizing all the things that I thought were outside of me are really me. It's me. Me and my environment are one. Everything that I touch, taste, smell, feel is a reflection of me, not that person or that thing in the environment. I'm the one looking at it, and I am the one experiencing it, and my experience is based on my output, my broadcast. Now, one would think that after all these years of studying and being certainly connected in spirituality and the enjoyment that I have in learning, that I'd know that by now. But let me tell you, it's a learning experience, it's a day-by-day experience to really recognize that there's truly the only outside is what's inside. Hard as that lesson has been, I can now say every day I chip away at it. Every day I uncover another piece that it's up to me to decide what my environment is. It is up to me to decide what my experience is. It does not matter one single drop what the environment seemingly is doing without me. It's me. It's truly me. And I wanted to share that.
That's excellent. And I think what you covered is some of what the trickster stands for. And it's kind of fun to look up the trickster in the dictionary, because a trickster is a clever, mischievous person or creature who achieves their ends through the use of trickery. And a trick has an interesting definition. A trick is a cunning or skillful act or scheme intended to deceive or outwit someone. So everything you shared there, Veronica, is an example or a discussion around the fact we're all our greatest tricksters. And if we can develop a little bit of sense of humor to that, then that helps us. But also some honesty helps. And who are we trying to outwit? We're only outwitting ourselves. And it's just an interesting journey. Is there anyone else that has a comment they'd like to make, either on that or something else? I see Trina's hand. Yes.
Yeah, it made me think that this is about calling in the observer. It's about really paying attention and expecting that some of our old blocks and some of our, you know, our old programming is going to jump up and try and stop us from moving forward. And that's what they had said. You have to expect to see it. So if we watch for that as the observer and we notice it, and we don't judge ourselves, but we just know we write the story. So it's our choice what we want to do with what we see. And it also calls on being very truthful inside, knowing that, you know, the program we're running from is from old experiences. And we really do, if we want to change, we've got to be open to looking at everything that's there and then move forward from that. So that was just my little comment on it. Thanks so much, Veronica, for bringing that forward.
It's certainly a common experience for all of us, part of our learning. And Rosemary has her hand up. Go for it, Rosemary.
Yes, hello. This is Rosemary from Frankfurt, Germany. Good to see you all. The trickster for me is also another way to say it is the shadows. And I remember that he said, I think in the introduction, he said that you have to be able to look at the shadows to really change, you know, or how he says it in this chapter, to change your storyline. And I just recently thought about that I wanted to get on some new things in my life. And then I realized that a part of that project I want to do, it's really hard to do for me, because it's like, you know, when you want to go up a mountain, you want to change your life, you go up the mountain on the top, or a new top of your life, or a new height, but you can't go up there because your baggage, you're carrying on your back, is so heavy, you keep falling back. And that's the image I had regarding a shadow or the trickster. You know, you want to change the storyline of your life, you want to make something new, but you can't go there because you just still have some stuff you have to look at. And that's what he is saying. And that's what is important also for understanding the whole concept in the book is that we need to look at ourselves. And I just had that image recently. Oh my God, there's still some baggage. I can't go up that mountain, that project. I still have to look at some belief systems to really move on that. So I think that's what I want to share about that. Maybe some other people have other examples how they see the trickster working in their life. I don't know.
Maybe. I think that's a great image, because if we just, even if any of us that have gone camping and know how we figure out what are we really going to need. And sometimes we get our bags packed and try and lift them up, and especially if you got a backpack, and you decide, well, maybe there's a few things in there I don't need. So in life, it's all those unattended to items that we maybe have not had the honesty yet to deal with, or haven't really even wanted to let go of. So visualizing that heavy bag on our back and how much nicer it would be to get it to be manageable is definitely a motive. And who else would like to comment on that? I see Marianne's hand up. Thank you.
Hi, this is Marianne Love from Melbourne, Australia. Yes, I mean, all of us really need to consider what he's talking about, which is we create our reality through how we think, even if it's unconscious, even if it's old programs that we don't even feel like we logically believe, that were passed down by mum and dad or generations, that even those programs are creating our reality. And if we've totally accepted that we manifest things in third dimension through our thoughts, because that's what he's talking about here, and also leading us more into in the next chapter, which is chapter 2, when thoughts more become things, then would we do the work to really shift it? Would we get charge of every thought, every feeling, and shift that, because what we put our attention on is what we manifest, and get off this automatic pilot that we've been on through our history, through living and accepting an unconscious reality? And I think the work does take first accepting that there is a truth in that our thoughts are things and it creates our reality, and fully embracing that reality that we manifest in third dimension based on information. And information is thoughts.
Excellent. And certainly a lot of those thoughts are what that baggage is all about. And the thoughts can actually be heavy. You know how we've learned that thought can be weighed. So some of our thoughts, the weight of those thoughts, when we face them and manage them, then we can let go of them. And thank you for touching on that. And who else would like to make a comment? Or it doesn't have to be on this particular part of it. Do you have something else on this section that you would like to? Yes, Mike.
Hi, Joyce.
Hello.
I was looking at the top of page 22, and it was... every time I read this, it kind of just like was, wow, that's so, he says it, when he says it, it's so subtle. And he says, he's talking about this new science-based information age that we're in right now. And he says, it leads to a new vision of reality, one where the imaginal, subjective, or virtual reality of the mind and the physical, exterior, or objective reality of matter link inextricably. That part I'm okay with. Then I hear, this link, as we shall soon see, transcends time and space. And that's the part that just blows me away. It's like, okay, so you're doing things today and they can have an effect on something that happened to you when you were 8 years old.
Mm.
And, you know, when you start to try to wrap your mind around that, you can spend a few evenings.
No. You can, but you can also get excited, correct?
Because that's why I spent a few evenings.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. To the potential of that is world changing for
it's mind boggling. Actually, yes. Actually, it reminds me of a story that Heian told me, and some of you know who Heian is. He's a doctor, a trauma doctor from Australia, who came to the United States and. Had gone to Harvard, went to Harvard and did a master's in alternative medicine. And he and I were talking one time about some of the things that are not necessarily common knowledge or well-publicized, especially by traditional medical associations and stuff. And he was telling me about this study that was done where they had gotten people together and they wanted to determine whether there really was an effect of prayer, if prayer really had an effect on or not. And so what they did was these researchers got together and they chose a population of people who were all in the hospital recovering, or what it was basically, they were all soldiers who had been in the hospital after having been, it wasn't soldiers, it was people who had been in the hospital, and they just divided them into two groups, and they had people who were prepared to pray, and these people prayed for them continually or very frequently over a period of time. And at the end of the study, the researchers found out that there was a statistical difference between the number of people who survived, the number of people, and also the time that it took for the ones who did survive to get well. So the death rate was lower and the recovery rate was faster for the ones who received the prayers. And I thought, well, that's pretty cool, you know, like you hear about this. And he said but the kicker to the whole story was that the two populations that the people had prayed for were people that they had chosen from 1918. So they actually prayed for people who lived in 1918 and who were in the hospital, and they had an effect on their recovery and survival rate. So that kind of illustrates what he's saying. And it just, when you think about that, it's just mind-boggling.
Well, it's proof.
And it is proof.
As Marianne was just touching on, it's the thoughts. So thought and prayer are kind of connected. And so it's a really powerful thought that goes into prayer.
Absolutely.
And that's excellent. Anybody else?
That's my 2 cents.
Have you got something more, Mike, you wanted to add to that? No. Thank you. Appreciate your thoughts. So who wants to speak next and on this topic?
Sydney, Australia.
Okay, yes, thank you.
That one of the key things that in terms of using it as a tool, I noticed that if there's something that I feel a little uncomfortable about or triggered that somebody else does, for me, that's a message to look at the trickster. For example, if I see someone doing something, maybe they cut someone off in traffic and I noticed it, then I say to myself, do you do that? And if it's upset me, of course the answer is yes. So I found that anything that actually has an impact on me, I can say I've done that. Now, this could get really huge. I could say, what about the most heinous crimes ever? Now, this is where we're talking about time and space. Did I commit a really heinous crime sometime many generations before, or did the biology, did the cells that I contain now, are they from a lineage where horrible things have happened? And all you need to do is turn on the TV and watch anything either today or historical to see that we've been in times of absolutely gross behaviours. And we know that if we go back 31 generations, we're pretty much connected to everybody else. So it definitely changes things when we say, could I have done that myself? And I know as we move to chapter 2, it also has a lot in there about the way to harmonise that is to really move beyond seeing out there and in here. So for me, it's to be able to say, in my being, is there the capacity to have done that? As much as I'd like to deny all nasty things, there is a biological reason to say yes. So it changes it from they're bad, I'm good, or I'm bad, they're good. And that's, for me, a trickster, being able to see what triggers and then moving that key part of chapter 2. Once I've seen that trigger, I can break it down by saying it's not out there, it's in here, which means I can also assist in making something more harmonious, because if it's in me, if I change, it changes. Not saying it's easy, but it's a tool that can be applied daily anytime something ticks you off.
Joyce, I think you need to unmute.
How's that? Okay, thanks. So Geraldine, that was just absolutely fabulous information. And because the public, general public, really doesn't understand that, that's an area where the ones of us that are starting to get an awareness of that and a strong sense of the impact that we want to make, that's something we need to be teaching and every opportunity that we can take, so that the world can start realizing the little things that they're doing all by themselves are having a major big effect. And that's powerful. And people can get excited about that. That doesn't have to be scary. So who else would like to make a comment about this or anything else? I see Calahu there. Go for it, Calahu. I think you need to unmute now.
I do. Okay.
Great.
When I read that and talking about, and there were such beautiful points from everyone brought up, I know that grandmother has taught us that as we do, we affect the seven generations that came before us and the seven generations that will come after us. Mm-hmm. So in the point in time in maybe in our genetic background, somebody did do heinous crimes. What we do today, say it's within the seven generations, what we do to rectify, like, say, a crazier behavior from an ancestor, we affect them. So we kind of play out. I mean, it's, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. You play out. In other words, what we do as individuals affect the seven generations that came before and the seven that comes after us.
Yes.
And Excellent. That's a very powerful, I think that's what it is, that it transcends time and space. Because if it does indeed affect seven that came before, that's already been here and gone, then that's transcending time and space, as well as what hasn't yet come. So it's a very interesting concept. But to look within, or for me, and I learned this as a young person, though, you know, apparently I don't follow it 100% of the time. But as a younger person, I was better at it. I would remove myself from the scenario. I mean, I would be in the middle of being crazy myself, the crazy reaction, and the other person would get crazy with me, but then I would remove myself. In the middle of the craziness, I removed myself and start watching it like it was a movie.
Mm.
Like I was watching a movie and we were all acting parts. And I was realizing what my part was in here. Now, whether or not I corrected it in that moment or just said, oh, hey, day, let's have this play out, you know, is another thing. But I do know that in the middle of acting that play out or that argument, and walking, stepping back, I had a broader view of, okay, you can change this by changing yourself, your tone, your attitude. You know how some people say, you know, it's not what you say, it's how you say it?
True.
And so watching it as the observer. And I do that when anytime I've moved from a house, we're packing up everything, we're moving things, and as I'm packing up, I feel like I'm taking down a stage of a play, of a block of a play that I just played for, like, say, 5 years. And as I'm packing away things and washing walls down for the next person who's going to step on this stage, you know, of course I want it to be pristine, but it just always amazes me that I'm looking at it like it's a play. Like, okay, this is over with. The show is over with, and now to the next show. So it's kind of a strange feeling at that point in time, because it's like you're moving space and time when you're doing that, but it's like you realize, okay, it was life form, but yet it was a play. Like everybody had their roles to play.
Excellent. But, thanks for sharing. Who would like to share next? Mary.
Hi. I wanted to go tie in a few pieces that tied in for me and listen to Rosemary and to Mike. And at the very end of this chapter, so on page 24, the last paragraph, you know, Mike, it says here, you must tap the time storyline, go to the Imagine Well and take the first step to magic and to a sacred awakening. That's kind of like on the flip side. What you read and understood really well was very scientific. So one of the pieces, I remember that study that you mentioned. One of the really amazing things about that study is that it was a closed study. So the documentation changed while it was closed and secured. This was one of the most extraordinary things that happened about it. And I was thinking of what Rosemary was saying, and of course, Marianne, about how, of course, what we think is what we are and our perception of ourselves. And I've been thinking about this past week and seeing how I've been having these thoughts of, well, can I do that? How am I going to do this? How can I do that? And I realized I'm a closed study. I was closing myself off. So I had these perimeters that I thought all of these things are shut down. And then I realized that how that football player, Russell, why can't you do this? Why can't you do that? And I started thinking, well, why can't I do this? Why can't I do that? And I realized, so when he's saying you have to tap the time storyline, go to the Imagine a Well, there's absolutely every reason why we can accomplish anything. And it all has to do about what we've decided ourselves, what we are, who we are, the choices we make and about what we can do. I myself have been through like all kinds of things, just handling the cancer situation. When I say all kinds of things, I mean all kinds of thoughts. And then I have to keep coming back to, well, I can have a completely healthy body. I do have a completely healthy body. What thoughts do I need to change? So I'm really glad, Mike, you reminded us of that study. Really extraordinary. And there's more than one study. I know that we've read about that in other instances too. And if we think of ourselves as, well, maybe we're one of those closed studies and it really doesn't matter. All we have to do is engage, like he says, in the imaginal, the feeling. He talks about it. You have to have the feeling, you have to have the desire, you have to have the thought. And as soon as that's clear, we've rewritten the book.
That's all so powerful, Mary. Thank you. Now, I think this is a perfect time to call on Rosemary to talk to us about the beginning of chapter 2.
Yes, thank you for asking me to do that. I would love to read maybe first chapter 2, which is under the letter, or better, the code, bide or bait. I would say bait, yes, alpha bait. That's what it is, basically. And it says, bait represents any container, any physical support, any gestalt. It is a first or primary divisor or separator. For to contain or hold is to separate that which is held from that which is not. It is a primary act, therefore, of consciousness recognizing itself. So, and he's repeating again that if Aleph, that was a chapter one, if Aleph is spiritual, bait then would be the material. And what I got from that is that, I mean, basically, to say it in my own words, what Aleph is actually an unlimited wave of potential, unlimited wave of potential. And when it gets contained, it gets separated. You know, it's just like if you have water, you know, you have a whole, you have the ocean, unlimited, and you take a bucket, you separate that water in the bucket from the ocean. And the idea, what I thought is that also what reminds me is that to make a distinction is also separating. The moment we make a distinction, we're creating a distinction in our consciousness, you know, this is good and this is bad and this is slow and this is fast. And the moment we do that, we separate that all possibilities, that unlimited way, we separate it and put it in a container in our mind. You know, that what came to me. And just to add for bait is also is the number two in the alphabet of the Hebrew letters, but it also means house, which I think is interesting because that is actually containing that kind of potential. A house contains these potentials. So just maybe some other people have some other ideas how they would describe the container who makes the distinction of the unlimited potential.
Sure. Thank you, Rosemary. Has anyone got some thoughts on bait that they'd like to discuss or even to go on to discussing the word, which is what this chapter is called, the word something from nothing, which is a catchy topic. Go for it, Mike.
Well, I'm not sure that what I was thinking meets all of your requirements, Joyce, but...
Well, there's no requirements. It's open.
When I think of bait as a container, I almost think of it as a womb. I think the first thing that pops in my head is the womb. It's like the not the seed. It's the place of life. Okay. For some reason, to me, that's what I feel when I hear that word. And the comment I had with Rosemary was, I had this experience, Rosemary, that gave me a whole different perspective, I guess, on opposites, you know, light and dark and good and bad and up and down and love and hate and all those things. And what I realized all of a sudden was they are the same thing. Like love and hate are the same thing. They're like on a scale. At one end you have love and one end you have hate. And if you go from love and you go a little bit down the scale, well, guess what? You know, you're loving, but you're not totally loving. You got a little hate mixed in. And so you find people all along those scales. Some of the really bad guys are down here, and some of the really angelic people are up here. But they're all, it's all the same. It's the same thing. We call it different, and that's how, to me, duality becomes unity.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, that just popped in my head. I don't know why, but it just sounded like it fit in somehow.
That's a great thought. Anyone else? I see Marianne.
I like that thought, Mike, and it really makes me think that if there's really no right and wrong in all of that, then all we have is choice, and we can choose to experience and trade our time for experience anywhere on that. On those continuums, because we're in duality, we're here to play with duality, and it's all up to us. And he says in this, at the end of the last chapter and into this chapter, that it was and is the formation of the most powerful tool ever created, the word. And I think that's really significant, because in chapter two he says the word is action. Language is action. And if you think about that, then it's actually through the words we say, the words we think, creates the action of our experiences. And that's where our choice is. That's actually, we can interpret anything in our experience whatever way we want to. We can make any story what we want it to. We can rewrite any ending, and we can create any reality through, because no one controls how we think. That's up to us. That's our willpower. Free will. That's what we're all given, free will.
It's powerful. Sure is.
And hey, Joyce, can I comment on what Marianne just said?
Please do.
As you were, I was so busy trying to get in that I forgot what I was going to say.
It'll come back.
That's pretty embarrassing. I'm sorry.
No, I think it's great. It's human.
Yeah, I guess.
It'll come back to you. So we'll.
Yeah, as soon as I mute, it'll come back.
Yeah, and put your hand up. Okay. So who wants to be next here? Hi, Trina.
I had a quick comment on bait too, because what came up for me when it says
you know, Aleph is spiritual and Beit is material. And when we apply it to ourselves, that last piece where he says, therefore, of consciousness recognizing itself. And Mike kind of touched on a little bit about the womb, but I'm thinking about all of a sudden our spirit is contained in a body. All of a sudden our body altar is created and our spirit is linked into that. And that noticing of the differentiation of me, because when babies are little, they're not in that place. They're kind of just part of the world. And then all of a sudden they hit a point of like, I'm an individual. And they start making demands. They start creating their life and their story. So this feels to me also about how we very first begin to create our separation from Creator. Mm-hmm. And that is as we move into the body.
Excellent point. And who else would like to speak here? New thoughts? Robbie? Go for it. Do you need to unmute?
Yeah, I forgot I had to unmute.
Yes, you do.
So I think this container, like what Trina says about the body, I think it goes even beyond that. It's what we think about everything. It's what we believe. It's like our paradigm, our view of the world. That's the container that we're in, or that we put ourselves in. And under the title of the chapter heading, on chapter 2, quote there that says, I think the universe is a message written in a code, a cosmic code, and the scientist's job is to decipher that code. Well, I think we're all the scientists. Each one of us is a scientist. And if you think about when you have a dream, like a really vivid dream, you wake up and you start thinking that dream and you want to interpret the dream and pick out all the symbols and figure. I think if we can do that with our waking world or so-called waking world, we're going to learn a whole lot about ourselves, because everything that's going on in our lives symbolizes exactly what we're creating. We can unravel the symbology behind what we see in the world around us, the people that we meet, the kind of experiences we have, the things that we see and hear, you know, like a particular song playing on the radio or pops into our head, or, you know, everything that's going on, like maybe you broke your arm, you know. There's a reason behind everything. And I think if we can figure out the symbology of our whole entire life, we can unravel that and figure out what the container is for step outside the container, because now we know what it is.
Good idea. Good guideline. And I see Gabriel is on the line here. Gabriel, do you have anything to add to any of this? You'd have to unmute. So maybe we'll go to Mike for a moment then.
Sorry, Joyce, I just remembered what I was going to say.
I knew you would. Go for it.
Surprisingly, it was so quick. No, what Marianne was saying about action, putting things into action, and how it's important to put them in action, it reminded me of, we have some friends who are musicians, and they live in France, and they were over visiting and touring and stuff, and here where I live in Quebec, and they were looking for a house. And anyway, long story short, we told them to write out what they wanted. And so they said, well, we've done that. But I said, did you write it out? And they said, well, no, we know what we want. I said, well, write it out, because you have to bring it into third dimension from fourth dimension. Mm-hmm. And they called us a week later, and they had found exactly what they had written out, down to the point where the guy who gave them the house paid them to stay in it because he needed a caretaker and leave. So they got their perfect house and got paid for it.
What a great story. Thank you. Dina, do you have something to add to any of these thoughts? Do you have something you'd like to add? You need to unmute.
I was going to share something. It's back a few pages, if that's okay.
Of course.
Well, on page 20, the second paragraph, it says, to make the break, to overcome mental inertia, requires a new way of thinking. With a new way of thinking, new ways to evaluate what one thinks appear. And it reminded me of a story with my husband, how I always believed one specific, like he was a particular way, just one specific way, and it would never change. And I had this, it was set in stone, my belief in how he behaved, his thinking, his action. Well, one day I decided to actually ask him how he felt about an event or something that was going on between us. And I decided to actually listen to him. And when he shared his thoughts on you know, this thing that was going on, it actually gave me a new way of thinking, because I never would have believed that he would have seen things in that particular way. So I just thought it was very interesting. It helped me to see you really have to, in my thought, you have to actually listen and ask questions to get new ways to evaluate how one thinks things appear. Because it gave me a whole new insight on him. And I began to think differently about him because I actually opened up a new way of thinking. So with this new way of thinking, new tools to evaluate appeared. So I just wanted to share that story.
That's a great story. And we can all gain from doing that. That's for sure. So Nikisi Weya hasn't had anything to say yet today. No, nothing. And what about Gabriel? I don't see Gabriel, but I see her name here. But she's muted. Do you have anything you want to share, Gabriel? And we have Steve Jones. Would Steve Jones like to share something today? When I don't see your face, I can't tell whether you're a yes or a no or not. And Anne is on here as well. Does Anne have something she'd like to share? So the faces that I can see, are there one of you that would, Marianne, thank you. Love to hear what you've got to share.
I'm always happy to share. On page 31, he talks about a word is just a sound. Everything depends on the audience or the individual, on how the audience or individual reacts to the sound. He explained that when we allow words to hold power over us, when we attach negative or fearful emotional significance to the words, we suffer. Thus, by not letting words invoke images, the words lose their power and become meaningless sounds. And I think it's quite powerful to reflect on that.
I guess a psychologist, I'm sure you could even say more on that.
I think that really speaks for itself, you know, and that all of us need to look internally about what we react to personally and what we personalize in this world, and understanding that whatever we personalize is our own storyline. It isn't what was said to us. It's what we decided was said to us.
So we're creating a little theater in a way. Are we theater of the mind or...
Yeah, we're all the actors and we're the producers and, you know, we do it all.
We're really successful, but
it makes a lot of fun, eh? Or not, you know, depending on the story.
Yes. So it's a potential for us to make excellent use of, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Good going.
I like happy endings, personally.
I don't blame you. So, who have we got that would like Veronica has something she'd like to share. And you need to unmute.
We can't hear you, Veronica.
We can see you're talking, but we can't hear it.
Why don't you go on to Mary, Joyce, until Veronica...
If Mary got something, if you got something you'd like to share, Mary?
Well, Marianne, I was looking at the same page. What I find really interesting, that had an impact for me. And then I read on to the next paragraph, where this is where you had, you know, opened up talking about how he talks about the word and bringing it in the understanding of action. And how it sounds great that, you know, all we have to do is monitor our reactions to what people say and then it won't matter anymore. And in this little paragraph right here and the next one, but really in this one, he brings forward an idea that it's not just the emotion that we might have, but what words can incur. And I'm thinking of right now of the riots that are happening, the words that are being hurled, the words that are being used to make sure certain actions are happening, and how the words themselves is the power. It may not be the sense of the word, but what the words being used to invoke, and how that, you know, that is a very, that's a direct electric charge having a central perceptor or a chemical response, and how that we've thought about all of that. He talks of the alchemists saying, you know, they've observed that for a long time is out there. And even in saying that that is out there, we've also learned that whatever is happening wherever in the universe, there is a causality where we are influenced by that. Maybe we've turned it off. Maybe we don't recognize what it is. But when there's a riot in Portland, when there's someone calling names to their husband in Spain, I don't know what anything like that. I'm just using the places. But the words, because they have an electrical charge that has a chemical reaction, cause a ripple. There really does have an effect. And even though it seems like that's all out there, there is an internal and in here response to it, greater than what he's saying that he sees, greater than just it being an emotional reaction. There is an action involved. So I'm still working that one out. But that is really powerful for all of us right now with the craziness that we're seeing in the world.
That's
yeah,
for
Mary,
sure.
That reminds me of what our role in all of that is to be able to observe and then hold focus on what we are creating, that we are broadcasters really. And so having compassion for that and then sending out the love that we represent or what it is that we're holding our vision on, and that will, I see, cancel it out or override it or, you know, like I feel like, yeah, when you own, like you're saying, that it affects and it's a part of us, and if we observe it now, we're involved in it, then what do, you know? And we hold that image, we hold the vision, intention. We say nice words, maybe that's what we do.
Yes, yes, yes. Someone else wanted to add to that or have a different thought?
Technical situation.
We've got a few more minutes here.
Can you hear me now?
No. Cannot.
Thank you. Had a hand up there, Joyce.
Thank you. Have you got something to add? Can you unmute?
There we go. In terms of the words, I'm also thinking of something I saw about the emotions and frequencies behind it, that sort of the one story that I remember hearing in a training about what are the words that trigger you, that you find trigger yourself when people call you certain names, and like certain names, especially for women, things that, and you know, that you have a reaction to, and working on how do you release that reaction. So that's something within yourself. But the other thought that I had was, I remember seeing something on Instagram, how dogs reacting to the emotion, not the words. So telling a dog that they're a bad dog, but in a really nice, you're such a bad dog. Oh, bad dog. It's like a very loving, but then it's like, oh, you're such a good dog. I really, really, really like when you do that. You know, so it's both of the, you know, working of the together. So when we are broadcasting, being conscious of having the two in sync, because we're broadcasting both. We're broadcasting the words because it's what we're putting out as the emotion and intent. And then it's also on the other side of the receiver. Are they picking up, you know, their own internal reaction to a word, or are they picking up the emotion and both? So it was just interesting observation.
A very excellent observation, awareness for sure. So we've got time for one more person to have some comments. Anyone want to kind of, Mary? You have to unmute. Did you have your hand up, Mary? Oh, you did not. And Veronica, I know, wanted to speak, but did you ever get yourself unmuted?
Am I unmuted now? Yes?
Can hear you a little bit.
Okay, can you hear me now?
That's good. Go for it.
One of the things that quickly that came to my mind within that passage, and talking about words and or words that affect us, words that we use to be effective, when I look at words that, let's say, in my childhood, I was called the king of beasts, and I was definitely called Buzzhead. And I can't tell you how much pain that brought me. And yet, I realized if I can say to myself Buzzhead so many times, after a while, the charge of being called Buzzhead was gone. It no longer bothered me. So I'm looking at how can I base whatever it is in a word that has such an emotional charge on it, and just totally dissipate that charge and turn it totally around. With me, it's like water off a duck's back, as they would say. You know, so I'm looking at doing those things in my daily life, you know, what catches me and how to get uncaught. I wanted to share that.
Excellent. Anyone else want to make a closing comment here?
Geraldine in Sydney, Australia. Yes, just that key part that straight from the book, that it shows that when you add up all the material world, it pretty much adds up to nothing. That's the actual solid part. You know, as they've said, you could squash it all down to a tiny pea head. Information, on the other hand, is infinite. And as the book says, there's the old adage, meaning the old saying, you are what you eat, has changed into you are what you know. And since your knowledge depends on the information you accept as fact, you are what you believe. So right now it's up to all of us to choose what we believe as fact, because that will create who we are.
An excellent closing comment. Thank you, Geraldine. So it's that time to conclude our studies this evening. And we do thank you for sharing your time and energy with us. You matter and count, so you always make a difference. We look forward to you being with us next week as we make that leap into greater consciousness. Have a powerful week and allow your light to shine, and always all good things to you. See you next week.
thank you for listening to Quantum Leap Book Club. For more information where you can contact us, go to loaradionetwork.com/quantum-leap. Have a great week.